Owen, the thought of Non, chapter 6. All literature shows that the thought of non-existence has always been at the forefront of philosophy and religion, simply because it always refers to creation, which by default itself refers to the idea that we, or existence itself was at one time not, kind of odd to say. The idea that there never was a creation or beginning is really not the norm, but I can't really say if I have read such a postulation in any of the older literature. Modern day scientists are up to just recently have used the Big Bang Theory to explain our beginning as a world and as a universe and eventually as a people, and it refers to a time that is so far back compared to the time scale of our lives that most of us do not consider to be very important, and also they realize that it's just a convenient idea of how things began. There are many variations of the Big Bang Theory, and it continually changes throughout our history, but unfortunately it is taught in schools as if it were fact, and this is just plain wrong. In case you don't know the theory, it goes like this. A superdense point of mass underwent a cataclysmic singularity event many millions or billions of years ago, resulting in a Big Bang, or rather an expansion, as they have recently added, to create the cosmos as we know them today. Pardon me. Of that, any inquisitive child could ask, where did this superdense point of mass come from? And science has no answer for that. So it recently modified the entire BBT to call the Big Bang Bounce Theory, or the Reciprocating Universe Theory, which simply states that the whole idea of expansion from a point of mass is eventually followed by a collapsing of the entire universe back to this point, and bang, it starts all over again. Really, is this the best they can do? Unfortunately, there is no other theories, just theologies, that require a God figure, and to cause the original creation, but both suffer from the same shortcoming. Who or what created the God or the original mass, and how is the space arranged for all this to take place? Even if it is a reciprocating universe, there still begs the question of the space and the matter involved. Naturally, there are some serious nutcase scenarios that place the responsibility of our existence here on Earth with aliens or involve some other dimensions that are supposed to solve this question of how humanity came to be without a place to put them or the material to make them. The eighth law of reality states that existence must have a balance with non-existence, and this balance cannot take place with any of the theories available, but, of course, a God figure involves the magic of creation and cannot be even addressed with this balance idea. Oddly, the BBBT theory involves a bit of magic too, in that the original super dense point undergoes unexplained chemical or atomic changes that have no parallel within science today. The point somehow magically became an entire universe through supernatural expansion, and it's just so silly that it really isn't a theory. Still, we teach it. The first set of laws of reality are positive statements designed to explain common misconceptions and have the quality of being irrefutable within the constraint of semantics. The second set is called entitic science, simply described the entity that we and our entire reality compose. The last set is called non-real entitic science and actually describe conditions that could not exist and indeed disprove themselves, but this oxymoronic quality cannot be escaped when discussing non-reality. Ennius law is designed to convey the foundation of reality as we know it by addressing its results. These are the fourth draft. Again, I will read them. There's only seven of them. They're kind of mind-bending, brain twisters, but they have a powerful teaching ability. Non-real entitic science. Unreality or non-reality. Fourth draft, June 10th, 2008. Unreality is the lack of existence of the lack of existence. Even the recognition of non-reality would cause existence. If anything is possible, everything would result. The impossibility factor of non-reality would have to be absolute, not so with reality. Therefore, the possibility is in favor of reality. Non-reality could not exist. States of non-existence could not be practiced within the non-void of non-reality. The conditions required for reality would always exist, therefore no beginning nor end. Reality cannot exist materially and externally because it cannot be contained, and no thought process allows infinite expansion. Now here's the explanations of these. Unreality is the lack of existence of the lack of existence. That's the first NES law, which refers to the concept or non-concept that with nothing, there would be no thought of nothing or qualification of nothing, and only within existence can this be proposed. To some, this could be considered nothing more than acute expression, but it's designed to convey the impossible idea that without existence, there would not even be a place where nothing existed. People in science, scientists alike, tend to think of non-reality or non-existence as empty space, and fail to mentally or verbally find a way of removing even that. These expressions attempt to overcome this problem by conveying the impossible thought. Next, even the recognition of non-reality would cause existence. This is the second law, and may be noted that many of these are very similar. This one is along the same vein as the third, but is unique in that it expresses the recognition of expresses that recognition of any sort would result in reality as we know it. Perhaps not as humans, but then that is an entirely different subject. Cognition is the key to existence. For non-reality not to be there, must be no place as well. If there were a place where nothing existed, it also could not be without the recognition of it, and that would mean everything would be caused if it were recognized. You may have noted that there is a major problem with semantic negatives, and therefore these could not be considered as irrefutable or absolute. They are rather colloquial and point out things that are the weakness of the non-existence theory. It's odd that existence requires a balance with something that only exists, that only existence could recognize, namely non-existence. Next, if anything is possible, everything would result, is the third law that means that the universe and humankind is the result of absolutely anything at all. You may find that difficult, but realize that for anything at all to exist, it must first be recognized by an intelligent or thinking process, and any single thought would result in the entirety of real existence for this very reason. Again, it does not refer to a condition or event that has occurred or would occur, but is merely a mental exercise on the non-real designed to teach and explain. The impossibility factor of non-reality would have to be absolute, not so with reality. Therefore, the possibility is in favor of reality. This is the fourth law, and somehow contrives that reality is odds on. The favorite of the two conditions, non-reality and reality. Unlike the laws of reality and intrinsic science, these can be discussed and debated. The explanation of this one is non-reality must be absolutely impossible because it cannot be possible in any way. But the possibility of reality does not have to be absolutely impossible, simply because it can actually be. This is difficult to grasp and seems to be a trick of semantics, which it partially is due to its oxymoronic quality. It simply conveys the idea that there seems to be less chance of nothing than something. Non-reality could not exist, The state of non-existence could not be practiced in the non-void of non-reality, is the fifth law, and gets right down to the nitty-gritty of the same old underlying theme here, that non-reality is something that is not something, and as such cannot be or be, and therefore not exist. This again leaves only one possibility, and that is existence. I think these seven non-laws hammer home the idea, and I really don't think they will be added to it. The conditions required for reality would always exist, therefore no beginning or end, is the sixth, the second last of these laws. It relates to the sixth of the tablet laws, time is a concept and can have no beginning nor end, and exposes that there is no known condition necessary for thought, nor any constituent identifiable of thought or cognition. Therefore, a beginning would mean some kind of change, as would an end, and there is just no evidence of this, nor any reason to consider it necessary or possible. So the default condition becomes no beginning. It also refers to the absoluteness of nothing and the absoluteness of anything, thus everything. Reality cannot exist materially and externally because it cannot be contained, and no thought process allows infinite expansion. This is the most recent and may spawn a new set or additions to the laws of reality, but cannot be added at this time due to the fact that the tablets have not even been delivered to the university as yet, so it was made here. This is very important and unique and may undergo a change in the wording at a later date. It shows why the theories of creation, evolution, and Big Bang are incomplete and unreasonable, because we are truly unable to think of a universe without edges. Oddly, our thought process seems to allow this, but that is due to obvious oversight. We must exist within the apparent orb of reality, because we simply cannot fathom an external matter-born reality with no container. This is also referred to as the container conundrum. When considered carefully, it condemns the existence of matter from a new perspective. This is the explanation that is carried within the figmentalism site. Contemplating how or why we exist or where we came from inevitably leads to the concept of non-reality or non-existence, which is utterly impossible to imagine, since one would have to first remove the stars, the planets, and ourselves, leaving only empty space. This seems to be possible to conceive, apart from the difficulty of answering the question of just how far space reaches, and trying to imagine this condition to be infinite. Our minds cannot get around such a concept because of the container conundrum. Space cannot be either limited or unlimited, but when you try to imagine the very space as not existing, nor the space for the space itself, our minds go into full arrest. Yet we continue to use non-existence as a balance for existence because it is such an obvious conceptual default. One could even argue that if nothing existed, there would be no need for such a concept, because that too would be gone. Thus the first NES law. Unreality is the lack of existence of the lack of existence. Largely an exercise in semantics, oxymorons, and double negatives. The main feature of NES law would be that the condition of non-existence must be respected as a balancing factor and also as an overriding factor, in that we must somehow exist without doing so in a truly material sense. We must be strictly ethereal. As in the case with the laws of reality and entity science, there is much overlapping and redundancy, and it is fairly obvious that these things cannot truly be communicated. They are primarily written in this point form to dismiss any of the currently held views, such as the beginning to life and the universe, material or matter as our founding evolution, and the belief that anything is real beyond thought. So, that's the end of all of the laws. Don't break them. Namron Sor.